What does Halloween sound like? So today, October 26th, 2016, we're going to have a guest. So I am just going to immediately see if we can call our guest in here and get them connected. Drip, drop, drip. On the magic Skype-a-ma-phone. Skype does not get spooky for Halloween. It just seems to look the same. I thought it would look like a pumpkin or something. A pumpkin. A something.
Hello?
Hello. Hey, you're on the show. Ooh. Woo. Spooky.
It's a spooky show.
I was hoping, I was saying that I hoped that it would be, Skype would be spooky, but it's not spooky at all.
Oh, you were hoping for the echoey Skype?
Yeah, or just like it would have like a pumpkin when I dialed or something because it's October.
Oh.
But nothing. Well, I guess,
my environment is full of spooky smoke.
Does that mean, what does that mean?
Oh, I accidentally, I have a small kitchen much like yours.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I store like some of my kitchen stuff like kind of on the burners when I'm not using them.
Oh. But then also when you are using them sometimes.
Right. And one of the things that got stored on there was my colander.
Oh no.
On my cast iron pan.
Oh no.
So it kind of melted onto the cast iron pan.
Now are you going to melt it and pour it off and preserve the pan, or just is it all a loss?
The colander is definitely a loss.
Mm-hmm.
The colander has a big giant, like, the colander's gone.
Yeah.
It's really kind of like just perfectly burned in a way, like to be a total hole. I'm going to try to save the pan because I actually got a lot of the plastic off, like the big chunks of it.
That's good.
What's hard to get off is like there's little bits of like film, it looks like.
Mm.
That's what seems to be the struggle to get off. What I found online was either to sort of melt it off, melt the rest of it off,
yeah,
like with oil, or to freeze it. But it seems like freezing it's more for big chunks.
Yeah, that doesn't, I think melting it's the way to go. Although in a well-ventilated, everything that you're supposed to do, they're like, do this in a well-ventilated room. And I'm like, well, it must be fucking nice to have a well-ventilated room.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I, you know, it's one of those things where, like, they, I think they just tell you to do that because it's going to make a ton of smoke.
Yeah.
You know, because you're burning a whole bunch of plastic.
Right. Well, they're like, spray paint only in well-ventilated rooms. And I'm like, well, okay. Like, noted. Noted that that's your preference. I did want to say, so I got a tweet today from a mutual acquaintance of ours. I don't know if it's Apt Owl or Apartment Owl.
I think it's Apt Owl.
I think so, too. For some reason, up until today, I was saying Apartment Owl because I think that's what APT, when I see that, I think apartment because I'm a Craigslist man. And then I was Apt makes more sense, actually.
You and a Twitter wizard known as Spintax the Green also thought of it as apartment.
Spintax the Green?
Spintax the Green.
Okay. Is this a real person, or is this like a ghoul of Twitter?
He's real in the magical land of Foon, but that's on another podcast.
Oh.
We don't talk about other podcasts.
No, we don't. Fuck that. But she did tweet at me that there was a lack of cheap booze in 2016. So I just wanted to point out that I'm drinking a Bud Light out of a metal bottle.
Oh, so you got one of those like stadium bottles.
This is from a golf tournament.
Okay. So
this has been heated and cooled at least twice. And now I'm drinking it in my home.
That is one of the things that has changed about the show as it's aged, is that the amount of drinking on air plus the quality of booze on air, like the quality has gone up, but the drinking has probably gone way, way down.
Yeah, quantity and quality. It's always the battle.
It's probably just a function of getting older.
Oh, yeah. The horrors of aging are that you can't drink like four beers anymore and feel fine the next day.
Yeah, you have to decide between drinking, like, you know, it's that two beer cutoff for me becomes like a really hard limit of, once I'm beyond that, I'm gonna, you know, there will be effects.
Yeah. Also, I think that, like, as you get old and you're unhappy with your life, it's sort of like, I can't go out and drink on a Friday and then lose all of Saturday. Because you're like, Saturday is all I have. Like, Sunday is a wash. Friday night is just, you know, a waste anyway. So Saturday is all I have. If I go out and get wasted on a Friday, and then I'm hungover all day Saturday, it's not, like, fun. It's like, I didn't do any of the grown-up things I'm supposed to do.
That's true. Like, where you don't do your, what Apt Owl and Kai call adulting.
Mm-hmm.
Adulting, where you've got to, like, do your laundry.
Yes.
You know, go grocery shopping.
Yep. I just went grocery shopping tonight, and let me ask you this question, and we'll get to the spooky stuff, but I had this idea for an invention that Poon Master Flex swear exists, and I'm saying it does not. And we almost got into, it almost came to blows over whether or not she knows what a duffel bag is. Which is a crazy thing to fight over. But I'm saying, like, you know, you go to the grocery store and they've got the, you know, these reusable bags that everyone has. But mm-hmm. Why don't they have, like, a grocery bag that's like a duffel bag so it actually fits all your groceries inside? And then a carry, you know, the strap goes over your shoulder so you carry it in duffel bag fashion. That seems like a way easier way to shop and carry my groceries into my apartment. Does this not exist? Am I crazy?
I mean, I guess you could use, like, a duffel bag and just bring it to the store.
And I think that may have been her argument, was that the duffel bag already exists, so why couldn't you just use a normal duffel bag? Which I can't argue with in a strong way.
I think part of it is, like, whenever I think of a duffel bag, we'll go back into history. I often think of those Nike bags.
Yeah, that we used to have. All of us had these matching. I may still have mine. I do. You know what? Okay, I still have it. Let's just leave it at that.
Because that seems like almost like a small enough size to be for groceries. Because most of the time when I think of duffel bag, I think of, like, that's way too big for most groceries.
Right. Well, see, I just bought, like, I don't know, $130 of groceries. And then, and maybe part of the situation that other people aren't understanding when I say duffel bag of groceries is, like, I like to go in one trip, but also it's a function of the fact that, like, where I park my car to where my front door is kind of far, and there are 1, 2, 3 doors, one set of stairs, and 2 of those 3 doors have locks on them. So I can't just, like, it's not like I'm going from the garage to the kitchen.
I would be, you know, I think part of it is the thought of, like, a duffel bag would be really useful for almost everybody who rides, like, a bicycle somewhere.
Yeah, or if you're taking the bus.
Or if you're taking a bus. I mean, part of it is, I guess, with a bicycle, like, people will have, like, that little basket on the back.
Sure.
So you can kind of load up your groceries that way. Plus, a duffel bag on a bicycle can throw you off balance.
Sure.
Like, when I used to do my grocery shopping by bicycle, I would just always sort of hang the bags off the handlebars.
Right, and try and even them out.
But I think part of it is, like, yeah, I mean, see, for, like, for you, a duffel bag makes a lot of sense. I think there's a lot of people who don't want to use the duffel bag because they really want to try to keep their stuff upright.
Yeah, like, people are so fucking precious about their groceries. You know, like, oh, okay, I go in the produce, I gotta put every little produce in its own little bag. And it's like, why? Why, what the fuck for?
Like, it's the kind of thing where people are scared of a lot of that strange, stupid stuff. I learned today, I was taking a class, right, and then we were talking about sort of, like, risk assessment and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, people's assessment of risks. And I learned, think about it this way. What do you think is more likely to happen to you? Do you think you're more likely to die on a bicycle or from gunfire?
Oh, on a bike. Well, me?
Let's say the
probably on a bike. I don't ride a bike often, but
it's like the average person is way more likely, almost 10 times more likely in the U.S. to die of gunfire than they are on a bicycle.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem accurate.
I think part of it is that there's a lot more people, there's a surprising number of people who play with guns, like, and have accidents. Like, I think there's also, it's very hard for you to be killed by someone else on a bicycle.
Oh, that's, so if I ran into a wall, that would not count as me being killed on a bicycle. That's me killing myself.
I think it's also it would be hard for you to, like, run into somebody and kill them on a bicycle.
I see what you're saying.
Plus, like, sometimes,
I guess,
you know,
too, like, it would be very likely that I would crash, but whether or not I would die seems less likely, probably.
That odds are good, actually. Like, if you were wearing a helmet, odds are pretty good you're not going to die unless you got hit by a car. Plus, it'd be really hard on a bicycle to kill more than one person.
Yeah, I think that, I bet this also depends where you live, though. Because where I live is not a bicycle-friendly zone. I mean, at all. It's not even a pedestrian-friendly zone. It's almost like if you're here and you're not in a car, it's like, what are you doing?
They have a sidewalk because almost out of tradition or law, something like,
they're just like, I don't know, it just doesn't look right if there's no sidewalk.
Well, it's if there's no sidewalk, then it becomes an obvious fuck you.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can kind of deal with the subtle fuck you of culture versus the obvious. And also, like, if you have no sidewalk, people will walk in traffic.
I see all the time, and, like, it makes me crazy around here, people doing, like, a drop. I was on the university campus today. I saw multiple people do the thing where they kind of pull up near a building and drop someone off. And this is, like, an able-bodied, like, 20-year-old woman being dropped off. And they're, like, holding up this traffic to let this person out of the car and stuff. And I'm like, I think you could have parked and they could have walked. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to do that.
It's not as if it's, like, a super, you know, snowy day or super hot day or...
Well, even if it is, like, when I'm at the grocery store, people will do this. They'll let someone out and then go park. When it's, like, a fucking grandma, I'm like, oh, okay, you know. Yeah, it's probably hard for them to make it into the store. But when it's, like, an able-bodied 20-something in a yoga pants, I'm like, fuck you. Like, you can walk from the back. That's fine.
It's not something like a movie theater where I can almost see, like, someone strategically doing that and be like, I'll go buy the tickets, you go do that.
Sure.
Where I expect that. But, like, grocery store, it's not as if, like, okay, I'll go and get a head start on the shopping, and by the time you come back, you know, I'll have this all sorted out.
It almost feels to me like a weird sort of rural hillbilly-ish thing of, like, no woman of mine is going to walk any more than necessary.
And like, so as if somebody's going to snatch them up in between, you know, like in the parking lot.
Right. Tom Hiddleston's just going to slide in there and be like, oh, I see that your man made you walk through the parking lot. Not very classy, is he?
Like, there's going to be just hooligans going around the parking lot in a pickup truck, and if they grab the woman, she belongs to them now.
Yeah, something like that.
Like, I mean, it's a weird thing. Like, I live in Phoenix now, and you would expect, like, but when I lived in a smaller town that was much, much safer, and there are definitely fewer ne'er-do-wells around, I saw more people walking around the grocery store with their guns.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I think there's just a function somewhat of small towns, like, having this exaggerated fear of how bad things are.
Right.
How dangerous something is.
Well, and I think there's a weird, when you live in a small town, there's a weird thing of, like, I don't know. I feel like in a small town, people don't really get, like, for example, you don't get mugged very often. This is not part of your reality. And so when you do, or when that does happen, there's a increased sense of danger, because you're like, I feel like when you get mugged in the city, it's like, they just want my fucking money. But when you're in a small town, they're like, this person wants to fuck with me, you know. This person, it's more personal somehow, even though it's not, I guess. But yeah, someone just mugged at, like, weirdly, in the parking lot of the building I live in, like 2 weeks ago, someone got mugged at rifle point by an unknown assailant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, what is your plan exactly, you know, if you're mugging someone at rifle point?
I don't know. I mean, the people who got mugged, I think it was, like, two young, like, college-age women who, you know, were not expecting to be mugged, basically. Which, you know, I guess no one's expecting to be mugged. And, you know, there were two of them. It's not like they were out alone. And it wasn't super late at night, either. Like, Poon Master Flex and I were out walking. It was probably, like, 9:30 or 10 p.m. on a Sunday or something like that. So it was a weird, weird thing. But this, you know, there's weird stuff in this neighborhood. This is a weird neighborhood. Like, I've called the cops twice, I think. And I am not a cops caller. But, you know, situations where you're like, the cops definitely need to be called. No, you know what? I only called once. The other time I was going to call and I heard someone else calling. So.
Like, you heard someone else, like, in the next room, like, next apartment over calling?
No, it was a guy. So this guy was getting beat up, basically, and I could see out my window this happening. And then I heard someone yelling and saying, like, stop doing that. I'm calling the cops, you know, and whatever. But, yeah, so I don't know. Shit happens here. I don't know what to say about it, really. It's a weird... If I had to be, like, categorizing, I feel like the crime in this kind of size of town is more personal. It's more like, it's more likely that when a crime happens to somebody here, I think they know the person. Then it's just a random crime of, like, chance or whatever. You know what I mean? Like a goal-oriented crime, maybe I should say.
It's like, I mean, I get what you're saying. We had to do our, like, security training at work, which was a lot of, like, you know, looking around, being aware, and stuff like that. But it is like a lot of stuff here has pretty much nothing to do with the individual. It's all like crimes of opportunity.
Yeah.
Like you see someone walking by and it happens to look like they have a, you know, a purse. So you kind of snatch it.
Right.
You know, or like they're kind of looking around for somebody they think they could, you know, snatch the purse and get away.
Right.
But they're not like waiting for a particular purse or a particular person. They're looking for like the first best opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah, and here I feel like it's the opposite. Like most of the crimes that happen, or most of the violent crimes especially, are like because they're pissed at this person, not because they want their purse or whatever.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean, that's what it sounded like with somebody who gets robbed at Rifle Point. Like those people had to have known each other.
It was a really weird thing. I don't know exactly what happened, but when you just hear someone robbed at Rifle Point, you're like, huh, that's a little strange. Like, what's the excuse here? You can't find a handgun? I don't buy that. I feel like, why could you get a rifle and not a handgun? And I guess it'd be equally frightening as the victim of the robbery. But it's just like, this is a very strange thing.
It seems hard to, like, mug somebody because, like, with a handgun, you could kind of keep the gun pointed at them while grabbing whatever, you know, thing they had.
Sure.
Whereas with the rifle, like, you're going to have to keep both hands on the rifle.
Yeah. Yeah, you're taking your chances, I'll say that. Well, I think that's like- the whole thing here is, like, where I live specifically... I don't know why you would rob somebody who lives here, because I'm like, hey, listen, this is a studio apartment. You know, it's not an expensive area. The chances that anyone here is carrying like a wad of cash is almost zero. And then, you know, people don't just like rob people out in the suburbs, I guess. I don't know what you'd call it. The neighborhoods. Like the nicer neighborhoods that are like your typical, like your Edward Scissorhands neighborhoods or whatever. So it doesn't seem like a place that has very good robbery opportunities because you're like, well, I'm either robbing someone who probably doesn't have a whole lot of shit or I'm robbing someone in a neighbor. But, you know, it's not like you just see people walking around out in the neighborhoods that you could easily rob.
Yeah, that's the other part about, like, a place that has very low pedestrian traffic. Like, your mugging opportunities are pretty limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, both times I saw people getting beat up here, the one time I called the cops and the one time the other people did, it seemed pretty obvious to me that the people knew each other. You know what I mean? Like, this was, it seemed like some kind of drug-related thing that was, had gone south. And the one guy, they just kind of rolled him and then moved on pretty quick. The other guy got beat up pretty good, but I don't know. It definitely didn't seem like just a random, they just saw this guy and decided to beat him up.
It's the kind of thing that I remember hearing about, like, in middle school or in junior high, where, like, you had this idea of people just get jumped.
Yeah, right.
And beaten up. And I think, like, I heard that more than I actually saw that or experienced it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was, like, one time, I remember in, like, fifth grade, this kid I knew had a starter jacket, and these kids jumped him, quote-unquote, and took his starter jacket. And that was, like, but it was a big fucking deal. But also, you're like, that's fucked up, man. That kid was in fifth grade.
It's, I mean, that's one of those, I remember the starter jacket as being one of those things that everybody really wanted. And now, as an adult, I'm like, because they think, like, our mom was against, like, buying those kinds of things, generally.
Yeah, I think I had, like, a Sam's Club jacket most of junior high or whatever.
Yeah, and I think as an adult now, I really understand where she's coming from, where I was like, yeah, that was dumb.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you get these starter jackets. Everyone wants them. By the time we're in, like, junior high school, basically it's, like, what's used to line the edges of every lost and found. Because no one gives a shit about them.
There's a jacket, like, yeah, you basically claim, like, no one claims them. They just stick there forever and ever. And it's like, well, we'll just put them in a donation bin.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just like, okay, these are, I mean, I don't even know if you could buy a starter jacket. I don't know if that's a thing anymore.
It makes me, like, wonder on eBay if they're going for, like, a lot of money or basically no money.
Let's look. I'm trying to remember which team this specific starter jacket was for. I'm going to go over to eBay. Starter jacket. Okay. Well, this still exists. Vintage Seahawks jacket. Do you want to guess how much it's going for? Oh, I have two different ones. Do you want to guess? Okay. These are going for a pretty good price, but not crazy. Guess an average for these starter jackets.
Oh, man. Average price for those starter jackets. So there's a vintage Seahawks one?
There's one that... Okay, I'll tell you the listings. There's a vintage Seahawks... There's a San Diego Chargers vintage 80s. There's a Seahawks winter jacket. Looks like some different sizes. Dallas Cowboys starter pro full zip. You know, Redskins, Washington Redskins. A Raiders jacket. So I would say they're mostly at like two price ranges.
See, I'm going to guess that there's probably, like, I'm going to guess, you know, I'll throw a low-end guess of, like, $22, and then a high-end guess of, like, $45.
So the low-end ones are, like, $40, and then the expensive ones are, like, $100 and something. But, you know, that's what they're requesting. I would say the average is, like, $60.
But, see, I don't remember how much they cost when they came out. So if that's just like the price that they were adjusted for inflation. But that seems really high.
I think they were pretty expensive when they came out, to be honest. Like, all right. I would say 60 is about the average price that you could pay. I wish I could remember which team this kid's was for. I remember it was like, maybe it was like red, white, and blue. Like maybe it was a Patriots jacket or something. You know, the problem is... I was not a sports guy. So if it had been the Patriots, I would have been like, I don't fucking know. I don't know. Anyway, so it looks like you can get them for 30 if you tried. I would say if you paid more than 60 for one, you're a fool. If you bought one, you're a fucking idiot anyway. But
really, the only reason to buy one now is if you're going as like fifth grade, you know, fifth grade fantasy Ian.
Right. What I wish, you know, like, okay, here's a great, like, if you look up 90s starter jacket, you get like a Seattle Supersonics, and it's fucking ugly as shit. The colors are, oh, Charlotte Hornets. You know, that's like $40. The Knicks, the Chiefs, all these things. But yeah, they're ugly as, like, you would not wear these. A Toronto Raptors, like, purple jacket. These are not things you would want to wear around. I don't think you would ever want to wear these around. Maybe it was Buffalo Bills. I don't know. All it seems like all the teams are like red, white, and blue, right? Seems like cheating.
Like almost every team has one of those colors in it.
Yeah. It would just be so weird to see someone show up to work tomorrow and they're in like an Indiana Pacers 90s starter jacket. I'd be like, what the fuck are you wearing?
I think I've seen the occasional starter jacket, but they're always on homeless people.
Right. Yeah. You know, like, if I saw one at a thrift store, like here's a Bulls one for $80. Like if someone had a Bulls starter jacket and was okay, Miami Dolphin vintage 90s, $40. And it's, you know, this like turquoise and orange, loud as shit. And it's got that great logo that I actually like a lot, where it's the dolphin wearing a football helmet. It doesn't fit on its head at all.
Yeah, like, where you're trying to figure out, like, how a dolphin puts on a football helmet.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm not entirely sure that's where a dolphin's brain is. But someone shows up wearing this, and they're like, I paid $40 for it. I'd be like, was it for the joke? Or was it for the, you know, why? What happened? Tell me what happened.
It's like you found $40 on the ground, and then you looked up, and there was a $40 dolphin starter jacket sitting right there, and you're like, God is giving me a message.
Yeah, or someone was just like, here's $40, but you have to spend it in 10, 9, 8, and they're just like, starter jacket, I don't know.
It's like a Brewster's Millions scenario, where it's like, here's $40, but you must spend it now.
Yeah. Yeah, when I get down to 10, you can't spend, you know, it's over. So you're screwed. Well, so this is an October show. And so we were going to talk about some spooky stuff.
This is Halloween, everybody, my Christmas in the pale moonlight.
I saw this article, and it was about Beetlejuice, like it was like 10 things you might know about Beetlejuice. This is a kind of a long story, but like I'll just sum it up this way. I was thinking about things to put my ashes in when I die. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm sure you probably remember. We had this toy, Beetlejuice Vanishing Vault.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, that would make a really good urn, I think. But anyway, it was like 10 things you might not know about Beetlejuice. And, you know, on top of one of Beetlejuice's costumes, there was this skull. And it was like, that looks an awful lot like Jack Skellington. And I was like, I guess. I mean, this is reaching for me.
It's fascinating because I was watching the Honest trailer about it that I didn't know about Nightmare Before Christmas. Is like, Tim Burton did not write the movie, direct the movie, or make any of the music for the movie.
Yeah, he just produced it, right?
Yeah, he did like basically nothing.
I know. It's one of his better movies, too.
He used to put his name on the front of it, and basically everyone else does all the work.
Yeah. I don't know. Beetlejuice, I was printing up coloring pages for this thing at work, and I came across some Beetlejuice coloring pages. And do you remember the scene in Beetlejuice? So it's like the end of the movie where, you know, the original inhabitants of the house are like exercised and they're kind of rotting away and stuff. And so Winona Ryder is like, okay, Beetlejuice, we need your help or whatever. And he's sitting on the grave, on one grave, and he's got his feet up on another grave. And it was a picture of that moment. And it just like, that movie just has so many warm fuzzies for me. It's unbelievable. Because just seeing that, I was like, oh, I remember that part. That's like one of my favorite parts in the movie. And then I was like, what happened, Tim Burton? You used to make these great movies, and now I don't even know what you're doing anymore.
He just got lazy. Like, he's one of those directors, over time, he got lazier and lazier.
Yeah.
Where some people, it seems like, to some degree, like Michael Bay is basically making the same movie he would have always made.
Yeah, right. Right, he would have just been making Tango and Cash if he was in the 80s. And then, right. You know, now he's just making Transformers.
Which is crazy that they keep... Well, I mean, it's not crazy that they keep greenlighting those because they make almost $1 billion.
What? That's what's fucking crazy, though. Why? Who is watching that?
China.
For, like, the fifth time?
It makes, like, $800 million in China, each one of those films.
I don't care how horrible this sounds. What the fuck is wrong with China?
That's where I don't know. Like, if it were Japan, I would understand, because, like, they're into giant robots, and I'd be like, oh, they like giant robots.
Right.
I get that, but, like, why does China like this movie?
Yeah. Well, and I just... Is there, like, some... You know, is this something we're going to find out in the future? Like, it turns out that the person who was translating the movies for Chinese audiences was, like, this amazing... screenwriter and actually made these movies, you know, the Chinese version. If you watch the Chinese version with English subtitles, you'll be like, oh my god, this is great, you know,
something. But he made sense of everything,
yeah,
in an interesting way.
Something.
I don't know, maybe it's just like it's easy to translate like robots punching each other in slow motion,
right?
But it's kind of hard to translate something like, say, spooky horror movie.
Sure. Ooh. I just, you know, what? I guess. I just can't figure it out. I can't figure out what's going on where China is like, oh, yeah, this is our jam right here. And everyone here is like, this is one of the, like, even the first one was bad. And then they just got worse, and you're like, these are they the worst movies ever made? No. Are they among the worst? Maybe.
They're... You know what I would love?
Hmm.
And I think, like, now I have a new fantasy of something you want to see. I would like to see Neil Breen make a Transformers movie.
I have ordered his new DVD, so I hope we're all excited about that pass-through available from his website.
I don't know where he came. I guess, like, it's the thing is, like, there's an ironic appreciation of him.
Uh-huh.
But what people are, you know, are realizing is, like, that's basically funding all of his stuff.
His ironic. You know, I don't even think I appreciate him ironically. Like, I think there's something about watching a movie where... There's something I appreciate about watching a movie that I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen. It's going to be horrible. But I, you know, and I have no expectation, but also there's no disappointment because I'm not like, Jesus Christ, why would they do... Like, how... So many movies, I get disappointed because I'm like, how the fuck did this make it through a whole committee of people, right? But then his movies, you're like, well, it's one guy. And so you can kind of see... why it would make it through all the people. But I don't know.
But there's some stuff that, like, you know, you can get why, like, you know, why a movie seems a little bit incoherent.
Yeah.
If it's made by a whole bunch of people, because you realize, like, okay, there's so many people not really talking to each other.
Sure.
Shooting their own thing, doing their own stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like when I watched Suicide Squad, that's what it felt like. Is like
I people saw just, that, too. What did you think?
Well, because I like the costumes.
Okay.
I think that it did, you know, I've used that description of from Red Letter Media before of like some intern was walking with like three different versions of three different scripts.
Yeah.
Ripped and then like lost all the pages went flying into the air. And so this, like the intern was just, like, grabbing pages and shoved them together.
Yeah.
Kind of what came out. I think when I realized I hated the movie, like, the okay. You know, I had a moment. I have a specific moment of, you know that scene in the bar?
Yep.
And they're sort of all told, like, hey, you can go whenever you want.
Yeah, when they're kind of taking a break from the plot for no real reason.
Yeah, break from the plot. and Captain Boomerang stands up and just goes.
Yeah.
He's just gone. He's like, I could go whenever I want. Fuck yeah, I'm gone.
And is he gone for the rest of the movie?
No. There's like a hero shot slow motion sequence and he just like walks and shows up again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? This makes no sense. Like, these things don't connect together.
Right.
Like, you're told, hey, that bomb in your brain isn't going to work.
Yeah.
So you're basically free to go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
He goes like, right when he hears that, he goes, I'm out. Yeah. Like, I'm done. You know, like, he just walks away. And then he walks back for no clear reason. Like, because they have a whole discussion about how, like, their need to, you know, save the world or at least, you know, try and fix this problem.
Yeah.
But he's not there for any of that. He's just like, oh, I can go?
Right.
Awesome, I'm gone.
Right, I'm out of here. Fuck you guys, see you later.
And then he shows up for, because, like, the cool-looking slow-motion walking up the street sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, he just came back for no reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, it was... Everything that happened in that movie happened for no reason. You know what I think would have made all the difference in the world for me? Because this movie kind of ends with them fighting this... Like, too many of these fucking movies end with them fighting this god-level power that you're just like, well, they have no hope of defeating this, right? But then they defeat it. And you're just sort of like, why would you... If you're writing a movie... Why make this god-level power they can't defeat be the bad guy when you could just have it be like, well, let's have it something that's difficult for them to defeat, but not impossible.
Like a really strong dude.
Yeah. And like, you know, it's like, well, I don't know, what's going to... Harley Quinn's going to kick him in the nuts? Great. You know, well, now I guess I'll enjoy the next fucking Halloween of a thousand Harley Quinns.
I went to a Comic-Con and there was a thousand... I mean, there's always a thousand Harley Quinns.
Harley Quinn is like Deadpool in that, my God, do people at Comic-Con like to dress up as that.
I think it's because, and especially now, like, Harley Quinn is one of those costumes you can dress at pretty much... You know, I think, like, in Deadpool and Harley Quinn both, you can dress up at pretty much any level and it kind of works.
Yeah, it's not like an iconic costume. They have sort of different costume. Well, Deadpool's easy, but like Harley Quinn, there's so many versions.
Well, so yeah, you can decide how much, like Harley Quinn, you can show how much skin you want to show.
Yeah.
How good shape you're in, how tight you want your costume to be. But also you could be like, I'll just get the t-shirt and some hot pants and some leggings and I'm done.
Yeah, and I can have a giant anime hammer if I'd like.
Right. And, like, Deadpool, basically, you could be, like, just a dude with a Deadpool mask on and be like, yep, I did Deadpool.
Yeah, I'm Deadpool. Hello. Yeah, it's... I just thought that movie was... Well, okay. I went to this movie because, basically, the way I see movies in the theater now is like this. I work one weekend a month, and after I work that weekend, I have Monday and Tuesday off. And so one of my, you know, joys in life is to, on that Monday night, go to, there's like a, you know, a horrible shopping center in Loveland near us. And I go there, I go eat a crappy dinner and have a, like three drinks-ish at this like, you know, brewery place. And then go to the movie theater and just see whatever the fuck I think will be tolerable. And this is how I saw Suicide Squad. And so coming from that angle, it was like not terrible. As long as you're like, I'm not really expecting anything out of this, you'll enjoy it. But you're just like, there's nothing there that I'll remember.
See, I was having this discussion with someone the other day. I think it was actually Apdowell.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think what Suicide Squad really is it's like it's a great Sunday afternoon movie.
Yeah.
Insofar as it's not like it's the kind of thing that back in the day when you had TV and there was just something that was on TV on Sunday afternoons and you didn't really want to watch. It's like one of your only choices.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's Suicide Squad. It happens to be on TV.
Yeah.
I could watch parts of it and then go, like, check on my crock pot or see if I can burn off all the oil on my,
on my pan that I melted a colander on.
Yeah,
I mean, when you're folding laundry, it's the kind of movie where you're like, I don't need to pause this to leave the room. I can just kind of keep going.
Well, it'll be fun.
Yeah. I did think there was an interesting aspect of it, which was like, it was, you know, okay, so in comics, there's always a lot of talk about diversity right now. For some reason, that's like the big thing. And well, okay, the mainstream media, when they talk about comics, it's like a lot about diversity. And I was like, actually, this was by far the most diverse movie that comics have made, right? Because you've got like, okay, arguably the main character is Will Smith, and he's black. You've got Killer Croc, who is black, I assume, sort of. I mean, I guess it depends how you feel. Are you post-racial when you become a crocodile man?
I think when you're a crocodile, it seems probably not too black.
Right.
But
however, you know, his like they have this moment, you know, it's like their Armageddon moment where they're like, okay, we have a list of demands before we go into space. And, you know, his demand of for at whatever point is that he gets BET while he's in prison. But then, like, and then you have a Latino hero. You do have an Asian female hero who's kind of falling into an Asian female stereotype.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to count because it's like she doesn't speak any English, you know, to anybody. She's got a katana that steals people's souls.
Right.
Which, by the way, is probably the superpower that I think other critics have commented on as well. We're like, I kind of wanted to know more about this backstory than most other ones.
I did like, too, because I was like, okay, Harley Quinn's insane. This guy's really good at shooting guns. She has a katana that steals souls. This seems to need more extrapolation here.
And be like, why is she talking to the sword? Oh, it's got the soul of her dead husband in it. And I'm like, can we stop this movie? And like, can I just kind of click on the hyperlink to go to this other movie?
Yeah, or at least can this movie just have a Wikipedia article I could read in somehow?
Yeah, like, I just, you know, I really want to go watch this other movie that must have happened off screen.
Yes. Yeah, and like, okay, so, well, and I guess it's a stereotype, and at the same time, I'm like, is it a stereotype that, like, an Asian woman has a katana that steals souls? I don't know. But then,
it seemed like it was definitely not trying to be progressive. It was super lazy. They're like,
yes,
we'll have an Asian person.
Right. But then they also had a black female main character who was like thoroughly competent and kind of like edging between good and the bad and the good, I guess. What's it, Amanda Waller?
Yeah.
So I was like, as far as that goes, and then there's the one guy who got killed fucking immediately.
Oh, the Native American guy.
Yeah, I thought he was like Native American or something, but he got killed immediately. And then Captain Boomerang, who's non-American, I guess that's something, right?
He's Australian.
I mean, as far as casting goes, probably as far as your main cast in superhero movies, the least white American male cast by far. However, I don't know. That didn't seem to score this movie any points, I guess.
I think it's also because the movie was such garbage.
Well, yeah, probably doesn't help that like, it's a shit movie.
Like, it's one of the things, like, you can't score. Like, it's sort of someone says, like, well, it's got diversity. That almost makes it worse. It's like, yes, we managed to make the diversity movie one of our shittier movies.
Well, like, I feel like the shittiness of it is kind of like the DC-ness of it. Like, I will say this. I think I enjoyed Suicide Squad more than Batman vs. Superman. And it could be simply because I had no hopes for it, but
It's more enjoyable. Like, it's more easy to just be like, I enjoy this.
Yeah.
It's hard because there are times where I just wanted that movie to have a normal movie score, not have like a pop song popping every now and then.
I hated, this is something that drove me crazy with Watchmen too, because everyone was like, okay, Suicide Squad's not great, but the soundtrack is fucking amazing. And I was like, it's not amazing. It's exactly the songs that you expect it to have in this kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, when everyone's like, the Watchmen soundtrack's amazing. And I was like, really? It's got, like, you know, fucking, what's the goddamn, the Jimi Hendrix Vietnam song that everyone associates with that time?
Oh, All in the Watchtower?
Yeah, and it's got that in the Vietnam scene, and I'm just like, that's exactly the song that would be, you know, and like, they have a funeral, and it's like, hello, darkness, my old friend, and I'm like, this is exactly the song. If you were going to make a, like, if I was going to make a movie and be like, what would be the most stereotypical song I could put in here that has no meaning because its meaning has been quashed by overuse, that would be the song. And that was what was there.
It took no chances with music at all.
Right. And but it's like, it's got a Queen song. And I was like, I think that was the first time I remember a Queen song being used in that weird juxtaposition is like Shaun of the Dead, which is like 15 years old now.
And also a spooky Halloween movie.
Oh, yeah, oh my god. We haven't talked about anything spooky yet.
Actually, I guess a zombie... I don't know if zombie movies really count as spooky movies.
Well, no, but they're definitely Halloween area. So, you had tweeted me specifically because when I was talking about clowns, it seemed like you had something you might want to say about this clowning that's going around, or the idea of the clowning, or I don't know, clown related shit.
I guess part of it is because I have a that sort of growing collection of creepy clown memorabilia.
Yes, this is a thing that Ian has that has grown over time, which, you know, now every time you go to a flea market or some kind of like I don't know what you call these stores now. They're not like the Ark and shit like that, but they're sort of like I think they call themselves like an antiques market.
But or like a vintage store, really.
Yeah, it's just kind of old shit. Like, it's old garbage, but it's not here's how they work. You'll go and like there's usually a bunch of them in a row or a big building, and each sort of seller has a stall. And they put their stuff in there on consignment, and then they sell it at the store, right? So, like, sometimes they have valuable shit or nice stuff, and then a lot of times you're like, this is fucking garbage. But the one of the uniting factors, they always have something clown. Always.
Yes.
And so I always think of you when I see that. So how did this clown collection start?
It actually started, oddly enough, at Christmas time.
Okay.
That we had a white elephant Christmas party at my work.
Yeah.
And someone was looking around to say, like, okay, you know, give me the creepiest thing that you have.
Yeah.
You know, give me something really creepy and weird. And, like, she went into one of those antique stores, like, my coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the person is like, I know exactly what you need. Like, she just knew what to get. When she said, like, give me the creepiest thing that you've got.
Oh, the person at the antique store
was given this direction,
get the creepy thing, and they're like, I got the perfect.
Yeah, they went into the back room and got, like, the perfect thing. And came out with it, and it's like, that's awesome. And it's something that's on my Facebook page. It's the clown that has it has a porcelain head.
Mm-hmm.
Porcelain hands and porcelain feet. And the porcelain feet are attached by strings. And so, like, whenever, like, if you sort of are holding the clown and move it around, its feet will kind of flop around at the ankles.
So it's sort of a marionette.
Yeah. And so we tried to give it a name, and of course it became the legend of... No, actually, that was the second gift. The first gift was this clown plate.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, that was the first one. The first, like, that everything else was there, but the very first one was this clown plate that it was still a white elephant Christmas party, but a coworker of mine accidentally won it, like, at a silent raffle.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, they just gave it away as a raffle prize. And it came with, like, this thing, and it came with, like, a little, like, a certificate of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like, its original recommended price was, like, $60.
Now, this is a, like, kind of a horrific clown plate.
Yeah, and it looks kind of like he's thinking. I went to look up on eBay.
I would say plotting, but okay.
Yeah, like plotting.
I'm trying to find this photo here.
I looked it up on I looked it up online, and this artist had made other clown plates.
Uh-huh.
And there's one that you can find where basically there's a clown above a sleeping child. Like, and it's not like clear that he's being tucked in or something like that.
Right.
He's like in the room, and it's ambiguous about like what is happening.
Right. Yeah, well, and just there's something about, yeah, you're like, it's like, oh, here, I think I've got it here. Yep, I have a picture of this, and this clown plate. I mean, this clown, you've put, like, Starbucks, a bag of coffee, and you've put it on this clown plate.
I did.
And the bag remains untouched, presumably because it's on this clown plate.
Like, no one really wanted to take the coffee.
Yeah. And the clown looks, it's like this kind of, you know how it seemed like there was this mix of hobo and clown for a long time? That kind of seems to be what this is. Now, I think I'm looking at the sort of marionette clown. Is this the one he's got like a little plastic hat on too?
Yep.
And his name is Hobbles, is that correct?
Hobble
Sad Clown.
That's right.
And then he seems to be in this picture sitting next to a skeleton that's like the skeleton remains of a clown.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you come across this piece?
Actually, you gave me that one.
The skeleton one?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
I think you mailed it to me or something like that, but yeah, you found that one.
Okay. Well, that sounds entirely likely.
But what I have in the most recent collection that I think... I don't know if you've seen this. We were at the sort of antique stalls that you were describing in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Me, our mother, and Apt Owl.
Mm-hmm.
I came across this pile of old magazines. Really, they're old zines in a way, because they're like they definitely have the look of a homemade magazine.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Clown Chatter. And I have... issues of Clown Chatter, which are about all of these like regional different kinds of clowns.
Okay, like identifying clown types.
Yes, like there's one. There's an issue on Clownvention clowns, circus clowns. What you were talking about earlier, vagabond clowns.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's see what we've got here. Oh, this is the interior piece. Oh, man. So they had some other issues that did not have... So apparently Clown Chatter has had some various publication history where like they had some times where they had just a broadsheet with no pictures.
Okay.
And then other times where they have pictures. So let's see if we've got one. Ooh, we've got white-faced clowns.
Now, are those... black people in whiteface?
I don't think so.
Oh, that's just normal, what we would call a normal clown.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're wearing white makeup.
Oh my God.
When you say white face, I just assume white face. Like, that's a like black face, but white. But I guess not.
white face clowns. Okay, here's the description. All right. Okay. So keep in mind that the word clown is capitalized every time.
In this publication?
This publication.
Okay.
Like, it says, like, clown is always there. Everybody knows that the best-looking clown facial makeup is the white-face clown.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is the white-face clown has a white base on which any kind of design or color can be placed.
Mm-hmm.
Most importantly, this type of face can be seen from a greater distance than the other two kinds of makeup on clowns.
True.
Especially under darkened at night, indoors, or outdoors.
In the woods at night.
That's right. The whiteface clown is universally accepted, period. No matter where the clown goes, he is recognized as a clown and loved by all people of all ages.
Oh my God.
Right. Sometimes you will hear that this clown character is frightening to small children, especially after Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is the fact that all clowns and colorful adults are frightening to some children who have never been close to somebody with bright colors, especially a giant.
This seems like an excuse, but okay.
These children can learn that a clown is truly a friend.
No. No. No.
Oh, man. Let me see. What was I saving? There's some clown poetry in here.
Okay. Yes. All right. I'm interested.
So, are you ready for this? This is called Clowns Are Happy. All right.
Okay.
The happiest clown from all around. He's the man of the town who will never frown. You may see him there, for he'll always share a happy hello and smile, even a distance of a mile.
Oh my
God. It's great to be a clown and never frown.
Not only was that not great, but they used the same rhymes like a bunch of times.
That was Oh my God.
That was cheating.
Well, this is signed by an author.
Oh, thank God.
By Sunshine.
Oh, signed in his clown name.
Better known as Thomas E. Spielman from, hey, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh my God. He's inside the house.
Oh no. Oh my God. And this just keeps getting better and better.
Okay.
What I feel bad like having this on an audio podcast, but Everything in this newsletter, like right below poetry is compassion. And you know what you can do for compassion? You can sponsor a child.
Oh man.
So it's giving you this thing to sponsor a child, and it says you are assigned one specific child from an impoverished country. You receive his name, photo, and personal biography folder. You provide $15 a month to assist your child. Your support helps provide food, clothing, school fees, and supplies, medical care, and Christian training.
$15 a month.
I know, and this was back in 1976.
Yeah, I feel like it was pennies a day was what I was. I guess that's an amount of pennies a day, but that seems, well, $15 a month is like no money, but that still seems hefty for some reason.
Yeah. Care for your child is supervised by compassion staff who work with evangelical missions and churches overseas, including the Salvation Army, Team, Christian and Missionary Alliance, Southern Baptist Convention, American Baptist Convention, and many others. You may cancel your sponsorship at any time. Organized in 1952, Compassion now helps 27,000 needy children in 24 countries through the one-to-one sponsorship plan.
Okay. Now, this is in this, like, clowns industry-specific zine, almost. Like, and somehow they have this advertisement for, like, sponsoring. Do you think this is legitimate, or do you think it's, like, everybody who does this then gets a picture of, like, Hector and, you know, the same 2 to 3 updates about Hector, and that's that?
What I kind of hoped was there was something, like, where the kid gets information about their sponsor.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, a clown has just been given a whole bunch of information.
Do you think, like, the kid gets a picture, and this clown, they get this picture of this clown, and they're like, what, why is a demon sponsoring me? Like, what is this?
Or, like, yeah, Compassion Incorporated.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's just, like, a horrible clown face, and the kid is like, I think I'd rather die than live in a world where this is the reality.
Oh, Compassion Incorporated still exists.
Oh, God. And is it a clown-based charity?
See, this has its address in Irving Park, Chicago.
Hmm.
But now it has moved to Colorado.
Oh my God. Now is
this... He's in the house!
Does it have a Colorado, or does it have like a clown connection still, or is this new?
Hold on. It's loading. It looks like it has Oh dear. It appears that basically, like, the website has been bought out by somebody else.
Oh, man. Now, I found a picture, I think the first picture of this plate from, and it's my gift from the White Elephant Exchange, and it's from December of 2011. So this has been about a 5 year, is when this all started, like 5 years ago. So you've got this plate, you've got these magazines, you've got a puppet, you've got a skeleton clown. Do you have other pieces in your collection?
Let's see, I've got the plate, hobbles, skeleton clown. I have another clown painting that's the only one I've actually purchased.
Uh-huh.
And I actually purchased it on an OkCupid date.
Oh my god. Now, is this an OkCupid date that worked out or did not?
It did not.
Okay. I think, can you take us back a little? So, you go, how did you, on this date, I assume this was this a first date?
Yes, this was a first date.
And somehow you wound up in a position of somewhere you could purchase this painting, and then made the decision to purchase this painting. So how did
part of it, like, the idea was, like, we would go to First Friday, which is sort of like an art walk kind of thing.
Okay, yeah.
And one of the things they had, like, and I think, like, when we were walking around and talking, it was very clear to me that, like, she was kind of not interested in anything that was going on art-wise.
Okay.
Like, didn't really want to be there.
Okay.
Didn't really want to be... It's, like, kind of unclear that she wanted to be on the date in the first place.
Right. And you were just like, okay, she has no interest in, like, looking at paintings or whatever.
She has, like, no interest in art, no interest in talking. It's, like, kind of unclear that she had an interest in dating, period.
Right, let alone dating you. It was just like, why are you even here again?
Right, like, somehow things would just work out. Or, like, she went to First Friday, maybe, like, it just wasn't what she thought it was. But I think, like, she agreed to go to First Friday, even though it seemed like she was really not interested in any kind of art.
Right. Okay.
And so I was like, this is going kind of nowhere.
Yeah.
But I actually thought, like, we were walking around and we were seeing this stuff, and I saw this clown painting. and it says, it has a painting of, like, three clowns on it. And it says, like, it's got in text and letters above it, like, guns don't kill people, but clowns do.
Oh my god. Okay.
And so I was talking with the artist about it, and he's like, yeah, you know, people have it, and they, you know, they kind of like it, and, you know, it's interesting. And I asked him, like, oh, like, how much is it? And he's like, $10.
Okay.
And so I thought, like, okay, I've got $10.
Right.
And I, you know, I was talking, and she's like, you're going to buy that? And I said, yeah, I actually have, like, a collection of this kind of stuff. and see, my thought was, honestly, though, like, if she was able to sort of say, like, oh, that's interesting, or how did you get that collection, you know, then it could be one of those we would last forever kind of things. But if not, I'd be like, you know, this was not really going anywhere to begin with, so I might as well, like, dynamite it.
So this was kind of your, like, you know, shit or get off the pot moment. Where you're like, okay, she doesn't seem interested in anything that's going on here, which is dating, me, art, you know, kind of just walking around outside with no real agenda. So at this point, it's like, well, this is kind of a combination move of a Hail Mary and also a death blow. I don't know which it's going to be, but it's going to be one or the other, where either this will be the point where things, and I'm like, and then things went uphill quickly, or and then things were pretty much done. Is that
it's basically, yeah, accurate? It's like either it's gonna be all there or it's gonna be all over.
Right. This will either be the move that saves the relate, or, you know, creates, this will either be the insurer of, and that's when we decided to go on a second date, or it'll be like, and that's when we decided never to talk again.
It's the I knew she was the one, or like what she would say, like that's when I knew he was the one.
Yeah.
Or that's when I decided no.
So what was her reaction to, I actually have a collection of this kind of stuff.
She was kind of confused, and I explained it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to explain a lot of stuff. Like, I had to explain, like, what a white elephant exchange was.
Oh, okay.
Like, why I would go to, like, a Christmas party with coworkers.
Right.
And so I think that it made me get the sense that she was not very socially aware.
Well, it sounds like she didn't know what a First Friday was, perhaps. She didn't know what a white elephant was. I mean, what was this person, 5?
I don't know. Like, it made me, like, part of the internet dating back in my day was, I think there were some people who just spent a lot of time on the computer.
Right.
And almost no time interacting with other human beings.
Right.
And so when it came, like, they were fine and easy to talk to when they were sort of chatting back and forth on a computer, but, like, you met them in person and they were just, you know, mortified of the whole thing.
Right. Almost like, I kind of didn't realize that this would actually result in meeting an actual human person.
And I kind of get some of that where, like, basically you're meeting a stranger in a, you know, in a strange spot and everything else. But, like, First Friday seems like one of the least likely spots for someone to do something molesty to you.
It seems like a pretty good first date kind of thing. You know, where you're like, I don't know, we'll walk around, maybe we'll have a drink, we'll see some paintings and shit, we'll see some other people that we could talk about, like, seems like a low-pressure situation.
Yeah, it's like, it's the thing that's so public, too, that he can't do any, like, a guy can't do anything super weird.
Right, right, it's not like, meet me at fucking Chuck E. Cheese at 11:30 p.m.
Right.
And by Chuck E. Cheese, I mean in the back alley of a Chuck E. Cheese.
Behind the Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
In the dumpster. Not the bad dumpster, the good one.
Yeah. Not the one that the grease goes in. The one that the ranch dressing goes in.
Exactly. I call it my ranch. My Thousand Islands.
Oh, God. Well, that's a pretty good, like, I feel like Clown Collection is an interesting way to sort of either end or be like, okay, this person's interesting enough to date. Because it's sort of like, when you see how they react to that, then you can make a pretty easy decision. It's kind of like, also, Clown Collection is like, I think I've talked about on the show before how I have this desire to, you know, as I become an old man, to start some kind of secret collection that's stored in a room in my home or like in a closet or whatever that no one knows about. But then when I pass away, they find, like, for example, a whole collection of clown stuff that I seemed to deeply respect. You know what I mean? That it was, like, interesting to me. I mean, the example I used was, like, Nazi paraphernalia, but I don't really want someone to think I'm a Nazi. But maybe, like, right. You know, weird porcelain dolls or something with, like, all the eyes cut out or something, you know, something like that.
Like Precious Moments dolls, but you've painted them all in blackface.
Yeah, or, like, put blood on them or, you know, something right. Fucked up. Or, like, you know, Precious Moments and they're all standing around a shattered Precious Moments doll, like it's died, something.
You've made, like, a Precious Moments diorama somewhere in your house.
Yeah, like, there's a room, you open the door, and it's a whole mini Precious Moments town. But, you know, they've, like, and then there's, like, a book in a table in the middle of the room that's, like, the history of all these Precious Moments figures, you know, and they had affairs.
You
gave and
one and where you bought it and how much you paid for it.
No, like, a fictional history of their lives. Oh. Like, so-and-so was cheating on so-and-so with so-and-so, and then so-and-so, you know, has to cut himself in order to get hard and stuff like that.
It's like a town ledger for all of these Precious Moments dolls.
Yeah, except I'm sort of a god figure. Like, even talking about it, it's just so fucked up. But I could see, you know, if someone was like, you've got 2 months to live, I could see doing this. And then, you know, I pay the rent on my apartment for, like, 8 months. So then no one kind of enters it for another 8 months, and they come in and they're like, what the fuck? How did no one know this was what was happening?
There's just like nobody saw what was going on.
It's kind of like, you know that part in Seven where they find his apartment and he's just got these crazed notebooks just filled with crazy shit? I'm like, need something like that.
I was thinking like you could get, I was thinking instead of Precious Moments dolls, get like those little army men.
Yeah. But just
hundreds of them, like just everywhere.
Yeah.
They're all like in formation.
Yeah, and they're just fighting these imaginary battles or something.
Right.
Yeah, so I need something. You know, I always figured like if I was an old man and I had a whole house, I could dedicate a room to this, right? And just be like, this is going to be a whole thing. Like this will be, I want a room. And, you know, maybe even if I get crazy, like drywall it off once it's set up. So maybe like no one discovers it immediately.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe make it like a door that locks from the, you know, that only locks from, like, it locks from the other side, basically.
Yeah.
Open it.
Or almost like, you know, okay, it's like adjacent to the bathroom, and I take down the shower wall in that bathroom and just put up, like, paper. So it looks like a wall, but it's not, and so as soon as someone turns on the shower, it reveals this whole fucking room. Like, I want the reveal of it to be sort of like a surprise. But I don't, you know.
Why don't you go Shawshank Redemption and make like a poster or something?
Yeah,
and
have something a hole like
to
that.
Get in there.
Yeah, yeah, something fucked up where, or like wallpapered wall, but then the wallpaper is just, you know, there's a wallpaper right over a doorway.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh my god.
That actually works, like a wallpaper door.
Yeah, something like that. And then they just find it anyway. Clown Collection, I feel, is like the perfect thing for that.
Like the strangest part is that basically everyone I've dated, you know, long term since,
mm-hmm.
they've had the mixture of revulsion at the Clown Collection. By the way, the one piece that I didn't get to was I have a clown coffee cup.
Of course.
Which is like a clown's head, and then the handle is like a dog.
Okay.
It's like a sort of a, you know, terrier looking dog.
Okay.
Which really looks like a terrier dachshund kind of mix because, you know, it's long and thin like a dachshund.
I was going to say kind of a wiener dog or something.
And I usually put all my pencils in it at work.
Uh-huh.
But just because, like, as a drinking vessel, it doesn't work because it's got, like, the clown face is not, like, painted on. It's, like, molded in a clown's face, clown's head.
This is something I've noticed. I've had more than one novelty coffee cup in my time. And, yeah, like, you know, there's this great Spider-Man cup I had, which I thought was a cool cup, but you couldn't, it was worthless.
Cause you could.
The face would not allow you to drink out of it.
And also, like, you can't clean it.
No, right. Yeah, you're like, this thing sucks as a cup.
It's got too many nooks and crannies. But basically, every woman I've dated has the simultaneous revulsion of the collection and then contributes to it.
Right, and they're like, ooh, what about this? Yeah, that seems to be, like, the weird mixture where it's like, well, I don't know, that's probably how you know this person's right for you.
Cause it's like, yeah, when someone is like, yeah, they're willing to, like, they don't like it. Like, Apt Owl's deal is basically it has to stay in the closet.
It's like, as long as it stays out of sight, we're fine.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to demand that you get rid of it. But I also don't want to have to see it.
It's almost like, you know, this sounds like the kind of rule someone would have, like, if they were having an affair. And they're just like, I don't want to see the other person. I don't want to be confronted with the fact of it. And other than that, it's fine.
It's the, I'm going to tolerate this.
Yeah, right. I'll allow it, but, like, that's my limit.
Yeah, I have my collection of creepy clown memorabilia, which is always growing.
Right.
So far, I only purchased one thing.
Oh, so the rest have been gifts?
Yeah, everything else has been a gift. Like, Aft Owl bought all of those, the the clown newspaper.
Oh, I see.
Like, I was at the store, and I saw them, and I thought about buying them, but I'm like, eh, you know, pass.
Yeah.
But then I turned around, and she had bought them for me.
Well, this is, like, another thing I think everyone needs in life. But most people don't have control over what it is, which is something that you have that people know or associate with you that's a collectible type of thing. Because then everyone just gets you that shit for Christmas, right?
That's what I... Like, Simpsons memorabilia for me was a lot... That was it for a long, long time.
Right, because they're like, well, I don't know, he likes the Simpsons, that'll be fine, right? But then... Yeah, and I always think, like, oh, when I'm an old man, I'm going to have to, like, come up with something that I like that's also easy to store. Because I don't really want to fuck around with that much stuff. You know, so I gotta like, convince people that I like postcards or something like that.
You really like postcards. You don't want to convince people that you really like cereal boxes.
Right. Yeah, or I'm like, I like really giant Millennium Falcon replicas or something.
I like rock collections.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're like, let's just find something that's a little easier for me. So I feel like, yeah, and so yours has, though, somewhat against your will, become a sea of clowns.
Oh my god, this one is about Soviet circus emblems, or Soviet circus clowns. They have, like, an emblem.
Like a special, like, this is how you know that you're a Soviet circus clown.
Yes, it's a Soviet circus emblem.
Jesus fucking Christ.
They have, like, a whole list in here of, like, all of their routines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, that way if you wanted to copy their routines, this is what you would do.
So you're like, all right, I come out juggling, then I do this, then I do that.
Yep. But it's also got it's got clown profile for these issues. And there's this Dynamite the Clown here. But Dynamite has got this, you know, he's out of Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay.
And he's got a, let me see. Oh, it's Big Rapids, Michigan, sorry.
Yeah, be careful.
It says now, it says here that his home is now along US 131, 3 miles south of Reed City.
See, that sounds like where a clown would live, right? Just kind of like rural route, whatever. You crash your car and then he finds you.
Like, he recently completed a 5.5-month span of tours of 38 towns. From Bloomington, Illinois, up to Marquette, Michigan, including 2 spots in South Nashville and Knoxville, Tennessee.
Like, why? Doing what? You know, like, what was he doing? How are clowns, like, how recent are these magazines? Do they have dates in them?
From 1976.
Okay. That makes me feel a little better. Not really. Because there's, I feel like, a lot of unsolved crimes from that time. But I do feel slightly better about the idea, at least.
I want to know now if there's, like, a whole bunch of dead bodies found on, like, US 131.
I know, just look up crime, US 131, red nose, giant shoe print.
2 to 6 miles outside of Reed City.
Yeah. You got a map now with pins in it, and you're like, well, this is also a clown art of sorts.
Right.
Now, would you ever dabble in, like, for example, John Wayne Gacy art?
See, I think John Wayne Gacy, for me, is a little bit too much of that serial killer art.
Okay.
Like, I think what makes the clown art, like, the clown stuff especially, most of it is, like, the skeleton clown and the painting are creepy on purpose.
Right.
Whereas the other stuff is, like, not creepy on purpose.
Which is kind of what makes it creepy, right?
Yeah, like it's not like
there's no irony.
Yeah, this is someone trying to make a genuine thing they thought was cute.
Yeah,
and then looked creepy by accident.
Yeah, that's true. Like it's one of the clown stuff is kind of one of the remnants of something that apparently people didn't think was horrifying that has flipped over into horrifying territory.
And I think that's what makes it, you know, to a large extent, it's what makes it more fascinating, is that it is, it winds up being the exact opposite of what it was intended to be.
Right. Yeah, and there's definitely, like, when we're talking about these movies, especially, like, there's no, whoever created that clown plate did not think they were making something that they're like, this is horrific.
That clown plate not only thought they were making something horrific, they thought they were making, like, a work of art.
Yeah.
That would have commercial value because they had, like, the certificate of authenticity with it.
Right.
Like, they thought they were making a collector's item.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, but it's the most, but that's what makes it horrifying, right? That's, like, why, for example, like, weird porcelain dolls are so scary. Because you know nobody is making these to be scary. Like, no one is going through that in order to be scary. It's sort of like, they're just, no, these are like, that's a kid's dolly, you know? And you're like, no, that's a fucking horror. That's an abomination. But that's what makes it so bad, I think, is that it's not, it's like these movies they make now, like Sharknado. And you watch Sharknado, and it's not good. And it's not very fun because you know what they're doing, and they're doing what they're doing on purpose, right? But when you watch like a Birdemic, yeah, or Fateful Findings, you're like, I think they were really trying. I don't think they were trying to make a cult movie.
Like, they were trying to make an actual movie.
Yeah.
And it wound up being something just awful.
Yeah, or like, you know, the famous Troll 2. Like, I don't think that was an intentional... There's no way they were like, 20 years from now, people will be watching this in theaters and thinking, like, how horror... Like, they even have the director there in the documentary about it, and you can tell he's like, what the fuck? Like, people think this is funny? Why do they think this is funny?
They, the director in that documentary is, he's super, like, he believes it's a work of art.
Yeah. Yes. There's no part of him that feels like, this was just a funny... Everyone else in the movie seems to have a good attitude about, like, it was just kind of this misguided time of my life that I kind of forgot about, to be honest. And he's like, how come people don't respect this movie more?
Yeah, like, everyone else seems to at least... Yeah, like, they got what the movie was, except for the... Well, there's also the crazy woman.
Yeah.
Like, who obviously, you know, went just batshit insane.
Right, or possibly was before any of it started and just kind of... I feel like she would be in the same boat even if she hadn't made that movie.
Yeah, like, that... It is the same... Like, basically, even though she is batshit insane, like, she has the same story as everyone else of, like, this was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that like brings it back to me to the clown stuff that's so fucked up. Like, because when you see it at these secondhand stores, it's not like it's pictures of Pennywise from It or something. It's like they're just so uncanny and strange as to be horrifying, but also they're horrifying because you're like, somebody.
They just, yeah, like, just seem too bizarre.
Well, and somebody somewhere thought this would be normal. Somebody somewhere thought this would be a good thing to have in their home.
Seems like we lost you.
I lost you? Can you not hear me? I can still hear you. We went a good long time on the Skype-a-ma-phone. Maybe I'll have to hang it up here. Mute it. Is this muting me? Oh, there he goes. Okay. Well, you know what? I think that's going to do it for us. Like, I think that's going to be pretty much, boy, this is by far the longest, you know, mini-sode we've done for Halloween. But thanks for listening, learning a little bit about some horrible crime stuff, talking a little bit about the Suicide Squad. And as always, for the next week or so, we'll see you tomorrow. Keep it spooky.